He told me that he usually shares for about 40 minutes on Sunday morning, so that's all the time I get. And I said, I don't think so. I get at least an hour. I've watched some of the videos on the internet. But I hope you enjoyed the video. I have something quickly that I got to get out of the way to share with you. Pastor Gideon, those of you who know, he shared here 2 months ago. Their church has sent $500 to give for the trip to Mozambique in whatever capacity. So a $500 donation can be used. It's an awesome thing. And he wanted just to give from the church down in Belize that we fellowship, Christian Life Center. And he wanted that to make sure that it goes to whatever the need is for the trip to Mozambique. And so we brought the money and the funds. And so he was excited. And he wanted to wish his, you know, say hi to all of you. Emerson and Juliana wanted to say hello to everyone. They got to come last summer. And it's a neat thing when people that you minister to in other countries have the opportunity to come and visit and see your family and see where you live. And what a blessing it was for both of the families the last 2 years to be able to come up and meet all you folks that support the different ministries that they're involved with in Belize. So I had to get that out of the way. Also, it's very, you know, I've waited for this day to be able to share. And for me, it's exciting because you guys are family. And I'll have opportunities to share at other churches, but it's way different than having this opportunity to share with you guys. And I want to make it, you know, let you guys know what a blessing it is. And I know a lot of missionaries that I've met to know that this church prays daily for us, that meets our needs as we've been on the mission field, and also our wants. And to send me licorice and beef jerky and all the goodies that the team brought last year and packages that different people that are in the body support us, flashlights, really cool flashlights that are amazing in the jungle. It's been a blessing, and it's so neat. And I also know that we've been gone about 20 months, and we've lost dearly beloved that I've been gone. That with Trish and Bud and Doug, and I know that was hard, but they're with the Lord. And what a good time that I had, and didn't get to say goodbye and so forth. But God's in control, and it's neat to come home. But to miss a few members, you know, was difficult being on the other end. You know, living overseas is not really that easy to come to a funeral. And then I think of, I've had two unexpected family members pass away in the 20 months that we've been down there. And what, the first one, my aunt, I was able to come back to the funeral, but my cousin Ty that passed away a few months ago, I was not. So that was difficult, being on the mission field and not really having that closure. But God, through your guys' prayers, comforted. And, you know, there was a few times where you cried, but and, you know, it can be difficult, but I just appreciate all your prayers from this church and the love and support. And just as Rick, Pastor Rick has shared, just the heart and the DNA of this church is more than just Mesquite, but it's, you know, reaching the world. Let me do a quick summary for those of you that are here, and you may say, who's this guy? What? Why is he in Belize and so forth? And I'll try to do it quick because I got a lot to cover. I hope I can get it all done, but I probably will have an opportunity in August to share again on a Sunday. Let me make it very clear that God called us basically July 2012. I came up here, shared it with the congregation during announcements. And from July to October, which is a little less than 4 months, we were there. And all the support that needed to be raised financially, getting all of our house in order and all that, within 4 months, we're in Belize. And that's pretty quick. Most people, you know, 6 months to a year. But God just laid it out, made it clear, and with the timing of the school year, when the kids not missing a lot, that's what God did. And he's been faithful. And we made a commitment. There's no written down on paper where we signed with Toledo Christian Academy or for the church here that says, you're going to serve for this amount of time. We, in our hearts, as we prayed about it, with a move like that, we wanted to commit to at least 3 school years. And we just wrapped up the 2nd school year, and so we'll be moving on into the 3rd school year. And so I know a lot of people will be wondering how much longer we're going to be in the country of Belize and so forth. And I'm going to share with you, as I just shared, we're committed to another school year after that. We're not sure. As God opens doors, as God closes doors, we'll continue to seek him. But at least till this next summer, our plan is to live in Belize and continue to do the ministry and support the local leadership. You must understand there are different types of missionaries throughout the world. It's not only church plants. You have what we could call vocational missionaries, you know, as Stephanie, what we do, supportive roles. You know, a lot of times you begin a ministry and then you turn it over to the local leadership. Well, we're coming to support the local leadership because of the way that the school has been set up. And there is a dynamic that for many years it has been supplied by American teachers that raise their own support. They move down there and they live in the housing like where we live, in the bungalows, and they would teach. And they'd say, they'd raise their support and say, we want to serve for a whole school year. We want to just come down and serve in the school, teach the Abeka curriculum, which is very easy to teach. It's a great curriculum. And we want to teach in your school. Can you use us? Absolutely. And so they would pay rent for monthly, and it would go into the school to sustain and support the school. Well, it's moved in a direction of Belizean leadership, but also along with the fact that the Belizean government really wants their people to have the jobs. And so they have made it now very difficult that you can't just have a young high school graduate or a college graduate that doesn't have a degree in teaching to come down and just teach in a school setting. They no longer do that, and you have to apply for a work permit once a year. And so as we arrived, God changed the whole plans. We arrived thinking, oh, great, maybe a few people from our church, some of these young guys will graduate and they'll want to come and serve for a while. We'll be back there. They can live in the bungalows. We can minister to them, talk, share things on the culture, and encourage them in whatever ways. And that had changed because the family that was there, the government, for the first time in the history of the school of about 19 years, said, no, we're no longer giving work permits for volunteer teachers unless you have these credentials and all these different things. And so for us, we said, oh, wow. So we applied under the heading of mission coordinators, which we didn't intend to go down and teach in the class, but it would have been nice to be able to fill in, to teach if we needed to because we were short. So we ended up going down and playing in all the roles that you can't see, kind of behind the scenes. So, for example, I oversee all the financial all the finances and keep track of all the books for the ministry that come from the states and the donations that come from Texas and so forth that are sent down, the money that comes in from registration. And so I work with Emerson and I help him on that side. Liz oversees the lunch program. You have 115 students. Somebody's got to feed them. And so we provide lunches and we charge a fraction of what other schools cost, and it's really good food. I get blessed because I don't have to have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every day. I get good rice and beans, stewed chicken, and whatever's on the menu. And so Liz keeps, you know, busy with that. And then we just assist and support with the idea of helping, as a staff, raising up other Belizean leaders that can come alongside Emerson and Juliana to one day, obviously, you know, be able to help them and not just Emerson and Juliana doing all the things. And so that's where we're at. I really believe with the ministry that there needs to be a dual leadership between with American and Belizean helping and living on the ground, because a lot of teams come. And so it's much easier for me to know my American culture and to be able to talk to Americans and coordinate with teams and say, no, this is what you're coming down, this is what we need to do. For Belizean, that's much more difficult to get in American's face and be able to deal with those cultural issues. So for them, it's been a release that now I deal with the teams that come down. As they come down, I coordinate all their logistics. He's busy running a school, and so I do all the side stuff with having to do with the missionaries or teams that come. And so we've been doing that. We've had a total of about 5 to 6 teams in about the 20 months that we've been here, and it's been a total blessing. And I'll going into that, you have to understand that when we move down there, because that has changed, that we cannot have Americans living there for more than 9 months if they're going to teach, God just said, you know what, Trav, why don't you start thinking more of short term? Why don't you promote this idea, which you'll see a brochure, of the crossover agenda? Let me make it very clear, and I made it very clear to Emerson and the Belizean, I will not be there for I don't know how many years, all right? God has placed me here for a certain amount of time and to do whatever I can, and when God leads me elsewhere, then I'm open and ready when he opens doors. So for somebody to run this, we just need someone to facilitate. And so that's basically what I am. And so as I prayed about it and I came up with this name, the crossover agenda, for people to cross over into a different culture, because Belize not only is reasonably cheap to fly to, there's only an hour or two difference, and you speak English. So you can't get lost in the country. You get to talk to people. Their English is a little different, but you can communicate. And then also you get this experience of a kind of a third world setting, and you get to feel the humidity and the critters and the bugs, and you get to minister and to find out all these cultural differences that you will not find here. And so it's another opportunity as a stepping stone for those that maybe would like to go to Mozambique, maybe those that would like to go to South America. And so that's basically where we're at. We have plenty of facilities, and that's kind of the direction. We have a lady that's coming down in July for 10 days, and then also a family that's staying in our home, and it was cool. So we met them at the airport on Friday, had lunch with them, and they drove our car back down, 4 hours down to Punta Gorda, the area where we live. And they're excited. They're from Wellington, North Carolina. And it's been just a neat thing. And so that's kind of a summary. And then God has brought us back here to visit. My kids haven't remembered as much as I thought they would. They're having a harder time adjusting on this trip than it was when we moved to Belize. It was very smoother, and they're having a little difficult time. And we've only been here two days. We got in at, 2:30 in the morning, Saturday morning, whatever, yesterday, earlier morning. And we're here. And God is good, and it's good to have this opportunity to share with you. Now, I like the fact that because you're family, I can go whatever direction I want. And let me tell you, I'm going to go some interesting directions, because as I prayed about it and I tried my hardest to keep it all contained, I thought, you know, I'll try to do two things. One is, if you're here and you have questions, or maybe you're maybe considered being a missionary in the past, you watch these videos and your heart gets kind of stirred and excited. You know there's your church that's sending a team to Mozambique, you know, in a month and a half. But you know that you have missionaries to support Belize, that there's an opportunity to come visit at any time, which a lot of you have come down already since we've been there. How can I present and share what Travis has experienced over the course of his life? As I begin to add it up, 12 out of my 36 years living on this earth have spent outside of the United States. So one-third of my life between the Philippines and Belize has been overseas. I don't know why that is. I had the opportunity to grow up there with my family, but also just I have a desire and love other cultures and people and nations. And so what would I share if somebody was interested or wondering different aspects of being a missionary? And so I kind of was wrestling how I do this. And so basically what I'm going to share this morning is 10 quick points, things to chew on about missions, and then a story. And it's a cool story, and when we get there, I'll kind of dissect it and walk you through it. You have to understand, many people that want to come up and they want to ask, what is a missionary? And I'm interested in missions. How is your response in the missionaries that you've met or people that are interested? And number one that I want to share with you is basically, if you're feeling called, or if you feel this stirring of the mission field, or you watch these videos, my encouragement, as I've talked to many people, is that you know where it starts? Getting involved with your church. There's a family that, as I shared, that is here with us, right, that's staying in our home. And when he came a year ago, he was going to an evangelical Anglican church. And his pastor came, so I was able to meet him. And we had a great discussion and talk, and they were a blessing, the ministry. Well, this guy had some good heart-to-heart talks with Liz and I and his wife. And one of the things that I always shared with other people, and I shared with him, is, man, when you go back, I go to a large church. It's hard to get connected. You need to find the group that prays for missionaries, if they have one, which I know we do on certain times of the month. You need to get involved. If you're not involved with Sunday school and serving and teaching or cleaning, you need to be connected and involved. Sometimes I've met people, not a lot, but they think that all of a sudden, wow, that's exciting. If I just get to that point, if God would send me to the mission field, all of a sudden I'll begin to start serving. That's not the case. If you go to a church and you're plugged in, as you meet people, as you build relationships, as your pastor and your leadership sees it, they will see God's call in your life. And as you begin to talk to them, they will say, yes, this will be what an opportunity. And it's happened many times. And because of this church, and there's other churches that do it, they provide missions trips. As a missionary on the other side, you can honestly say, and most people will, missions teams are a pain. That's offensive. But the bottom line is, in a missionary that lives there, it's not the easiest thing. And there's a tendency where you want to see them maybe as a pain or it's a lot of work. But on the other side, I see it as, man, planting seeds. What an opportunity. What an opportunity that it did for me, and it's done for you that have come on the trip. I find that when I go to churches and I meet people, you can grow and you can mature a lot. But man, those that have been to Mexico or been outside of the United States and has changed their whole perspective, whoo, all of a sudden they're not, more spiritual, but there's a different value in the way that they see the church. There's a way that when they come on Sunday mornings in the comforts of the air conditioning that they think back, wow, when we were worshiping in Mozambique or Belize and there was chickens running around, it was hotter than crud, there was mosquitoes blowing, there was dogs running around. Thank you, Lord, for this Calvary Chapel Mesquite Church and for the air conditioning and the comfy seat. And they begin to see things from a different perspective. And their walks also get enhanced by this opportunity to be out of the bubble of the United States. And so when teams come, I get opportunities to share with them that side of it. But also, sometimes there's a tendency to go to the extreme and to come back and be bitter. We need to get rid of your cable bill. Start paying $80. Start sending it to Toledo Christian Academy. Stop doing this. You can go, whoa, way too far extreme. There's got to be a balance in everything. And so as I get opportunities, we encourage teams as they come back to have a debriefing time to go over these things that God has done, because teams will come down and they'll do all that thinking, man, this is so awesome serving the Lord. And they're just in the moment. And then all of a sudden they go back and they go to church, they go to school, and their lives are like, and they write and say, man, I'm really in a rough time. I had such a great time there. And now it's like my life has no meaning or no purpose. And so we have to be proactive as leadership, with Rick's been there, and as we share with teams. So number one, you got to get plugged in. Get connected. If you're not, or if you feel God or is calling you to a different, possibly in the mission field, begin to move that drink. Second of all, if you make it week to week by Pastor Rick's good teaching, because he's a great teacher, he teaches great. Calvary Chapels are known for their great teaching and their great worship. But if that's what carries you through from Sunday to Sunday because of your pastor's sermon, you're going to have a difficult time being on the mission field. If you don't have a personal time where you're spending time with the Lord, whether it's in the morning or the evening, whatever it looks like, your personal devotion, intimate time with the Lord, you are going to have a difficult time. Because let me share with you, for the most part, most churches, when you travel, you're not going to get great, great teaching. You're not going to have worship team that we have here, which is amazing. And if you're not grounded and you don't have this walk with the Lord and you're just dependent upon whatever somebody shares on Facebook or whatever you're seeing on TV, if you don't have your personal thing to spend time in the Lord and have Him speak to you or whatever, it's going to be very difficult on the mission field for you. Because not only will you sometimes be on your family, there may not be other mature believers around that can encourage you, that you can say, hey, I'm really struggling. We came down here, we felt like God was calling us here, but we're having a difficult time. Our kids are going through this or whatever. I am sharing these with you because I've experienced. We have a very close family that's in Texas now that did everything. They did the whole move, but they just didn't do their homework in meeting the other missionary that they were going to meet. And it was so sad. My heart breaks for them today. We have a good relationship with them, but it was a rotten experience for a missionary. And now they have a bitter taste in their mouth. But Lord had us the opportunity to share with them and to be able to encourage. So number two, is that. Please have a good, solid relationship with the Lord on your personal walk. Please, if only time you spend time with the Lord is here on Sunday mornings, hearing from your pastor, that's not enough. Find that time, whatever it is, that evening, 10 minutes as you're driving, whatever, that communion with the Lord. Number three, the thing. How did I write this? I'm trying to word it in a way that's, if you think that your church has got everything figured out and you've never fellowshipped anywhere else, you will have a difficult time. Well, what does that mean? I love Calvary Chapel. I love this church too. But this isn't the one true church. This is a church of many churches. All right? This is a part of the body, the universal body of Christ, that are worshiping the same God in different aspects and maybe the different flavors. And I always say flavors because when I live down there and I'm working with Emerson, who I had met him, but I never spent a lot of time with him. But man, we are like solid brothers. If he comes back from a more charismatic background and a certain style of churches or denominations, and here I come, and then all of a sudden we work in an office side by side, there's going to be a lot of opportunities to talk about a lot of cool things. And there's going to be a lot of times where he thinks, because a lot of times that I went to a Bible college for 2 years, that I have all maybe a lot of answers, and so he'll ask questions. And what an opportunity it is to be able to sit down and to discuss and go, my key is to go to God's Word, not a book that somebody wrote, not something that's on the television that they're saying. What does the Bible say? What does the Scriptures say? And man, there's been plenty of opportunities about that with Pastor Gideon and with Emerson and our staff. God has opened the door where Emerson says, hey, you want to teach our Friday afternoon Bible study time? And so every Friday afternoon, he basically says, I really just want to look at love the first semester and faith. So I was like, I can do whatever I want? Sure. So we started John 15 and 13 and looked through about love, with Jesus being the ultimate example of love. And so we worked our way through that, and what a neat time that was. But you have to understand, which those have had the opportunity to go down on a trip, when you go to other churches, especially overseas, and I'm taking from my experiences from the Philippines and Belize, is this: time has no limits. You think you get a little frustrated because we go past 11 here or whatever? You haven't been to another church in another country. That is the minimum, is usually 2 hours. That's the minimum. And if it starts at 10, it starts really at 10:15 to 10:20. And you think, well, I like to be nice and comfortable, so I'll just wear shorts and shirts or whatever. Yeah, you can do that, but you'll probably offend a lot of them, because you know how Belizeans come? In their best. They dress up. They get in their best clothes. And you know what they do? They sit in a hot, sweaty heat and listen to their pastor and worship on these plastic chairs. And they enjoy it. I go in there and I wear it and I dress up and I'm miserable. Lord, please, let's wrap this up. I'm sweating to death. My back is whatever. I'm hungry. Distractions have no boundaries. And on Rick, Pastor Rick's chair, lots of times there's chickens, the dog next door, these neighbors right next to the church we go. They drive me crazy. They get on their motorcycle right at the same time church starts, and they want to ride up the road. And I keep saying, Lord, how offensive would it be as I American if I go over there and strangle them? Would that make the news in Belize, or how would I subtly? And I just, Lord says, Travis, if it's not bothering them and they're not, you just, and so I focus on what's being said. And you learn to not ignore distractions and to be able to stay focused. And I'm thinking right now how quiet it is, and I'm nervous because I've been sharing a lot of times down there, and it's like everyone's really listening to what I'm saying. There's no cars going by the main highway. So yeah. So you need to, if you haven't, you need to, you know, have opportunities probably in your history of being to other churches and to visit, because that'll prepare you. And so when people come down for the crossover agenda, I told Pastor Gideon and the other, I've met with other pastors and talked to them, they're not just going to go, someone that comes down, depending on their time, just to one church. I want to take them out of their comfort zone. I want them to see other dynamics or other ways that people worship the Lord and so forth. And so they will go to visit our church, but they'll also go to a non-denominational church close to the property and maybe another one, and depending on their time, because different ways of worshiping. It's good to sometimes come out of your comfort zone and have that opportunity and to meet and build relationships with people that maybe right away you get, oh, they give me a bad vibe. Well, you know what? Let's start talking. And as you subtly and have opportunities to talk about, maybe they make comments, you take them back to God's Word and get to share. Well, really? Well, that verse there, by your stripes we are healed, what does it really say there? What was really the intent behind it? And all of a sudden, wow, interesting. I studied up on that. And I'm just like, wow, that's awesome. You're cool, Lord. And that's how that, I had the opportunity with the men of our staff to look again at a verse that all these years they thought it was one thing, and to be able to look at it again and be like, wow, all these years, that's a God thing. That's God's Word speaking and being faithful. Next thing, I want to try to move on. We'll see. I think we're doing okay. Number 4, if you think heat, critters, comforts will be the hardest, working with missionaries, you'll find, can be difficult. And there's You know, I know people say, oh, you know, Travis, sometimes you're too negative or whatever. And I want to be balanced in everything. I don't want to sugarcoat everything, you know, especially if you're living there. And I know, and I meet people that are possibly praying about going, especially to them, I'm going to say, here's the truth, here's the facts. A lot of the run-ins are maybe difficult. There's other ministries, you know, working together, and they're a children's home, so they cater to this. We do a school. They're doing a church plan, and having that balance and working together, being on the same page. Maybe they're a little more Pentecostal. Maybe they're a little more conservative, or maybe they're Lutheran or Methodist. How do you work together and bring glory to God's name? I'm not into buying into one island, or that we're going to do it on our own. There's no way. John 17, Jesus makes it very clear in the way he presents it, and I may share on that later as I get an opportunity. But a lot of times, the locals see it. It's one thing as Americans, we go down and we know there's a little disagreement or whatever ministries, but when the locals see, Mr. Travis, how come those people moved? They were supposed to be here 3 years. Why did they leave in 9 months? You're presented with an opportunity to, how do you share, you know, those kind of details? It's not easy. And so you pray with wisdom and you share from, you know, whatever God lays in your, you know, at the time, what's going on, but it's not easy. So not only the bugs or critters are hard to get used to, but also working with, you know, I mean, think about it, here at the church, how many personalities in here are always easy to work with? There's always going to be issues or things that as we grow in the Lord, but that's a part of the process. It's sad to me when people come, well, I can't get along with that person, so I'm not going to go there anymore, so I'm going, that's, really? Have you really got to know that person? Have you had the opportunity to share with them? To love on them? Practical issues. Things that are not easy to deal with, but are necessary. So that's another thing, if, as those that, you know, move down are things that you will come across. Number five, if you like to hear the answer yes, when they really mean no, you need to move to the mission field. Belizeans and most countries have a hard time telling, specifically even Americans, no. You think, oh, that should be easy to say no. No, it's very difficult. Hey, what are you guys doing? Well, for example, perfect example. Right after we got there, I'm thinking my American mindset, hey, Pastor Gideon, why don't we do on Sundays after church, using the Calvary Chapel Mesquite model, we'll have a potluck. You know, everyone brings or whatever, and we do a potluck after the service, so it's time to, well, guess what? We did it one time, and there wasn't really enough food, and people felt uncomfortable. And he says, hey, Mr. Travis, I don't know if it's going to work. You know, instead of at the beginning saying, I don't know if that's going to work, because a lot of these people are poor, and they can't bring enough for only for their family, and you're going to want them to bring for others? No problem, kid. We won't do it again. And from moving forward, we'll find the finances as a church to pay for the meal and invite people. Do you see? But for him, that was difficult. That's just an easy one. Hey, you know, Emerson, hey, what do you think this Saturday? We're going to do this and this and whatever. Yeah, sure. You know, Emerson's a little better. But most people, they'll tell you, yes. It's very difficult for them to say no. As I met a missionary, they were talking about the same thing with culture differences. And he said, there's a country, and I can't remember where they said, that they won't say no, they do this. So, you know, as an American, hey, do you care if we come over to your house or whatever? And they don't give you an answer, and they go, automatically that means no, but they're not really saying it. But the intent is, no, that's not going to work. So if you want to go to a place and you want to hear yes, hey, do you know Jesus? Yes, yes, Travis. I know. You go to church on Sunday? Yes. And then I meet somebody at church. I say, hey, what's his name? Sure. Is he? Oh, he doesn't come. Well, he told me he does every Sunday. Well, he probably did a couple years ago. Oh, so he didn't really mean yes? Those are things you'll learn and you'll find. So yeah, and the next thing as we move along, if you think America is the normal, you will quickly change your mind. You say, well, we know that. Car prices, you think the prices here are cheap. You go there, they're expensive, and I thought, well, that's just Belize to America. Our neighbors that live and rent the house next to us, that which money goes from that into the school, they live in New Zealand. And he tells me the same thing. Are you kidding me? We pay $6 a gallon for gas in New Zealand. Our cars are twice the price. I said, oh, really? I thought it was maybe just Belize. I mean, he said, no. Are you kidding me? The gas prices for the most part of the world is $5 to $6 a gallon. You Americans pay like way lower. And yet you guys make the high, you know, one of the highest. I didn't know that. All these years, I knew it was expensive in maybe the Philippines and Belize, but I didn't think some European countries and New Zealand and us, Well, yeah. I'm like, wow. Tipping. There. Juliana, it drives her crazy. We go out to eat to a restaurant, and the bill's, you know, $42. In my mind, 15%, you know, and I want to give a tip. Oh, Travis, you don't give them a tip. That's what they're here for. I'm like, Juliana, I feel like they're going to spit in my food the next time we come. I can't. It is ingrained in my American mind not to tip. But for them, that is the norm. And you start finding out, oh, so now you're starting to wonder, well, if I do that, they're going to get spoiled. How much do I give? And that's something that you just wrestle with. But the normal, and then I found out our friends in New Zealand, same thing. Wow. So yeah, if you're used to, and you think that America's normal, it's not. You get these opportunities to leave, you'll find out, wow, what a different, way different than I expected. How about the DMV? How many of you guys like the DMV here? You don't like it? I love it now. I didn't like it 2 years ago when I had to go in and pick the number and wait for like 10 to 15 minutes in the air conditioning with the iPod or whatever you want to use while you're sitting there texting or reading a book. I didn't like it then. Boy, I'd love to go there and deal with them again. For us to get our work permits, boy, oh boy, is it a process. And you've seen lots of stories from Stephanie. In most countries, there's a lot of red tape. And you must understand, I live there and I love the Belizeans, and they say the same thing about some of our crazy stuff we do in America. So I'm sharing this, you know, and I've shared with them, you know, all the same stories. But I go to do our work permits to what they call the Labor Department. And so we do this process, and I've waited, a month and a half or whatever. And so the lady, I go in there, I said, hey, I'm just here to check in person, you know, our work permits. Oh, I don't know. Let me check on him and call the capital of Belmopan. I said, oh, great, because I'll wait, because, you know, she's a new girl, so I'm kind of helping her, prodding her along. And so she goes, oh, you know what, Mr. Travis? I don't have any credits on my phone. So here's this. She's got, you know, the Labor Department officer, but she can't even call Belmopan to find out because she doesn't have credits on her phone. And so I said, well, you're more than welcome to use my phone. If you like, oh, I can? Sure. So she gets on the phone and is able to call and says, oh, yeah, Mr. Travis, they're going to come down. I was like, oh, praise God. That would never probably happen, you know, in our country, but that's okay. And I have this great relationship with her. So now, after you do all your paperwork, you think, hey, okay, it's how much, $200? Let me pay here. No, Mr. Travis, you can't pay here. You need to go to the Treasury Department to pay the $200. Oh, okay. So I'm like, well, Liz, I didn't have the car, so I'm like, I'm going to walk. It's, I don't know, maybe four blocks from down by where the boats come in to where this office is. So I walk, and of course, it's not the 75-degree nice cool weather. It's 85 with 90% humidity, and so you're sweating. And you get there, and you show up to the Treasury Department, and I give her the paper, and she goes, oh, they're missing a number, Mr. Travis. They need to have a number on you. I said, well, she's a new girl. Can't you? No, we need that number. I said, well, I walked all the way from, oh, you did? Yes. Well, we really need that number. And I look, there's a couple people behind me in line. I said, if I give you my phone, can you call her and have her? Okay. So I have her to my phone. She dials it up, calls. Thank you. Because I'm thinking, oh, I got to walk another four blocks there to walk back. And so my point is, yeah, you can't just even pay for certain things. You've got to go to the Treasury Department. So it's just stuff you learn that you enjoy after a while. But you know what it does? Now the DMV in Mesquite is amazing. It's like, wow, I can't wait to spend 10 to 15 minutes or a half hour even at that DMV. Going along with that, if you do lose your temper and you're frustrated, you do your best to smile and pretend like you're not frustrated. Because if they see a sign that you are frustrated, guess what they're going to do sometimes? Make you wait a little bit longer. You have to understand, in Belize and most countries, also what's important is a stamp. You have to have this stamp. Nothing is official until you get, and you guys are thinking, stamps, it's all electronic here. No, there's a real stamp that you actually use an ink pad, like the old school days, and you stamp it, and it says their seal or whatever, and that's official. These are all things that you learn and you begin to start enjoying and you understand. But if you show up sometimes at 11:30, you have to understand that from 12 to 1, mostly every shop shuts down for lunch. And sometimes you try to hurry and you get there and it goes past 12 and you're saying, oh Lord, please, please don't. Because I live 10 miles out of town. I don't want to come back at 1:30 and drive all the way back in because gas is $6 a gallon and it's a 10 mile out, 10 mile back drive. And so you pray and you just smile and hope that when they do it, they'll work past their lunch and help you out. And a lot of times they do. But it's that first time as you go in there and do your best to have a great attitude, to be patient, you'll be rewarded. And so you meet other missionaries, oh, I can't stand that person or whatever. Well, what happened? Well, they did this or whatever. And if you don't pay attention to your response from that point on, because it's a small town, you're going to have, oh, it's that guy. I remember you. And so fun things. And then finally, the last thing that I kind of did in 10 points is if these 9 points are something that you're interested, then you need to start at point one and get involved in your church. But these are just a few stories that I wanted to share with you to kind of give you a feeling of what it's like, and because a lot of people ask in different aspects of what you're dealing with. Some of you have heard other stories or whatever, but I really wanted to get that out of the way to encourage you if you're even interested or you want to know. Those are things that kind of God brought to share with you guys right at the top. Now, for some scripture to just share on one verse, 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 6 is the key verse that I want to just close and share with for these last about 15, 20 minutes. You'll notice that this is a kushtal. I've got all different kinds of spellings, but C-U-X-T-A-L is what seems to be the best. And you'll notice that I was in the picture right when we moved there about a month after. Emerson says, hey, I got a farm of an acre in Pastor Jose's farm. How would you like to come plant corn with us Saturday at 6? Well, right away, Saturday at 6, my red flags go up. Whoa. But I've never done it before. Emerson invited me. And so I said, yeah, what do I need? Because it's muddy. Oh, you definitely need rubber boots, Mr. Travis. You got to get some rubber boots. So what did I do? I went to town right, you know, a few weeks after we moved there. And I bought a big, nice pair of rubber boots. In fact, steel toe. I splurged a little bit. And so I was ready to go. And he says, okay, we'll be there at 6, and we're going to go plant on my farm. You have to understand, where we live outside of town, there are a lot of farmers. I am not a farmer. Nobody has ever accused me of being a farmer. No one has ever misidentified me as a farmer. I have never really wanted to be a farmer. I have really had no desire to be a farmer. And so, but, like I said, I just met Emerson, and he's a cool guy, and I said, what an experience. I'm taking my camera, and I'm going to go on this journey to go plant corn on his fields and Pastor Jose. So, got up early that morning. I left at 6 o'clock, and I show up, and actually, by about 6:05, 6:10, he's ready. We jump in the back of his truck. I get all my stuff. And a couple other Belizean guys from Machaca Road jump in. Now, this is the location is about within a mile of the school down the road that where a lot of the students that go to the school live on. And so I get in, and we jump in, and I got long pants on, and I can't remember if it was a long sleeve shirt. I might have, but I had my boots. And then we go, and we start to pick up probably 10 other guys. So as we're driving to this farm, I began to talk with some of the guys. Some of the guys I know, I used to teach them. And, Mr. Travis, you have a farm in the States? I said, yes. It's called Smith's. How often do you go to the farm? Well, every morning on Saturdays, mostly around 7 for donuts, I go to that farm. Liz would go to the farm a couple times a week, way more than me. And we'd get our vegetables, our meats, or whatever. No, bottom line is I said, no. I've never been a farmer. I've never worked on a farm. What do you mean? What a foreign concept. What do you mean you don't farm, you never worked or whatever? We have to understand, that is our farm, Smith's. When I begin to think about whatever, if you're hitting, no, it's not. Yes, it is. Unless you have something growing in your backyard and you're picking it every 1 to 2 weeks, or you're growing livestock, whatever, some of you may, but for the most part, your farm in our mindset today is Smith's. I know it's not pleasant, if you think about it, the way, especially being in the desert, where in Belize you could live without a grocery store forever because the water and you're planting your garden. But they, in their mindset, is a foreign concept. And I began to think about that and be like, wow, yeah, that is really the farm that I've grown up to as a kid for most of my life. And so we began this trek and we began to walk. Now, it rains a lot, especially in November. And so you're stumping through this heavy mud and your boots are heavy. And I thought I was going to die. Because I was still, at that time I was about 218 pounds and I've lost about 10, but I was 218 and I'm stomping through this mud and how much farther? Oh, not too much further. You know, that's enough. It's just like when Belizeans tell you right now, it really doesn't mean right now. Right now really means from 5 to 20 minutes. Hey, Emerson, when's that guy coming? Right now. So I always know, well, I still got about 10 minutes, sweetie. And sure enough, that's just a part of it. They say right now, it really doesn't mean right now. Once again, time's not really that important, right? It's about relationships. And so we begin to walk out there, and as I go, they give me a kushtel. What is this for? Well, you put your corn in here. You put, you know, a bunch of the corn that you're going to plant, and you put it over your neck, and you saw the picture, and we began to walk and head out that way. And then the way you plant is you get these sticks from the jungle, and you sharpen off the edges and make it really sharp, and you hit it down about 5 inches, and you throw about 5 to 6 kernels of corn. As we went out there, I had never been farming, and we went to first to Jose's farm. You go out there, and you think, and I'm thinking nice dirt, just nice dirt farm. And, you know, well, we go out there, and it's like something's already been growing there. And so what they do is what they call slash and burn. You just chop everything, kind of fold it over, burn some parts, and then really you line up 12 to 13 guys, and then you kind of go in a triangle pattern and so forth, and you put it in 5, and you all just kind of move in a line down that whole acre. It was pretty cool. And so you have all these guys doing it, and of course they're making fun of the big white guy, which is fine. But as I began to get there, you know, as we began to do it, and after seeing the preparation or whatever, I began to, God was showing me about planting and being a farmer. And on this story with the farming, is, as I share with you, the hardworking farmer is this. There's 5 things that I want to share with you real quick. 5 things that as over the 6 months of from the planting process until the harvest, that God kind of showed me that, Travis, you're a farmer, just in a different way. And everyone here, you know, if you're a father, you're also a farmer, but every person is some sort of farmer in their life, in the areas that God has placed in the people in their lives. What are they? Well, first of all, a farmer, he's prepared, all right? He prepares. Emerson and Jose and them, before we all gathered up on that Saturday, somebody had to chop and prepare all that land. Somebody had to know exactly where to plant, where's a good spot, what time the rain was going to fall. They had to do their homework. And if you're a new farmer, you seek out information from other farmers. And Emerson, from his father-in-law, got ideas and learned from him. It's not you just show up and do it. There's no such thing that I've ever met one in Belize, I may be one, is a lazy farmer. And so 2 Timothy 2:6 says, a hard-working farmer. Farming is hard work. It's not easy. And like I said, I don't meet very many lazy farmers, because if you're going to be a farmer, you know you got your work cut out for you. I'm not really cut out for it. I like doing it once in a while and helping out every single day. But man, to do that for 60 years like Pastor Jose has been doing and carrying corn from his field, I don't know how he does it. But he's prepared. He does his homework. He finds out what needs to happen. Well, how about in my own life, in your own life? As the people that are in your domain, the people that you come in contact with, whether you're children, what steps, what are you doing to prepare your own personal life? Are you spending time with the Lord? Are you seeking counsel and advice from other godly people that surround you? Are you aware of the condition and the state of the people that you're ministering to? Sometimes as leaderships, we can get caught up so much on how many people are here and how many numbers, and that's what we have to maintain, when the more important part is, how is their condition of the sheep? Are they healthy sheep, or are they skinny, starving sheep? But man, there's a lot of sheep. See, there's a difference. And as leaders and as elders, we have to watch in every dynamic, not only numbers, but the health of the sheep, the health of people that you come in contact with on a day-to-day basis. And so, fathers, this is another encouragement for you. How are you preparing? What steps? Where are you at relationally with the Lord? They're prepared. Second of all, as he goes out, what do? We planted. The farmer, he plants. So not only does he prepare, but he's planting something in people's lives or in your lives, your children or the people, you're planting seeds. Some of them may be rotten, and because of your attitude, and I'm guilty of it, they're not always good seeds. But our desire as we're walking with the Lord is that we plant and invest into people's lives. You know, they, as you meet people, as you, your children, and as you're planting seeds in their lives, as the farmer does, the whole idea is that they grow. That's the whole purpose. Why else would you plant it unless you wanted to partake of the harvest? And so in your life and in my life, as I look, the next he prepares and then he plants. And the next thing he does, he's patient. There was four kind of quick points that I shared with Jose about four nights ago when we had Cajun cabbage, which is another great Belizean meal. And I was sharing with him, and he says, Mr. Travis, patience. Farming is a lot of patience. And I was like, oh man, I got to add that fifth point too for talking about a hardworking farmer. He's patient. It doesn't happen overnight. We like, because we're in America, we like things to happen fast. We want to go down right now and buy this yellow, perfect piece of corn. Well, that's not always the case when you're growing a farm. You got to wait maybe around March or whenever the time is to get it to the perfect spot where you want it. It takes patience. A hardworking farmer has to be patient. As you're interacting, as you minister to other people, as you're doing what we're doing, and serving in Belize, and your expectations are here, and as you're meeting and investing in people's lives, and it's taking longer, you have to be patient as a farmer. Prepares, he plants, he's patient. And also, one thing you'll notice about a farmer, which is, you know, a story I'll share with you about probably a month and a half after they had planted this, Emerson comes in on the morning, he goes, hey, Travis, I said, what's up? He goes, we got a mountain cow getting into the cornfields, which is a tapir, you know, the tapir crowd, those big, they come in and they eat your corn and they destroy it. There's ducks that come around it. So tonight we're going to go out with our shotgun and look for it. I'm like, oh, great. I said, well, I'll pass on that trip because those mountain cows are big and they'll charge at you or whatever. But the point as he's telling me this is like, you know, you would think in my mind, because I'm lazy, I plant it and I'll come back in 6 months and there's my corn. No, there's more to that with planting. You know, you prepare it, you plant it, you're patient, but you also got to protect it. You got to protect. And so they would go out, they'd find these animals, he'd shoot ducks or whatever it takes for your crop. You got to do some protect. Now, obviously, this is in working along with God's Spirit working, but in our practical explanation is, what are you doing to protect those that your loved ones that are around you, your children? Maybe in the areas of things that they're watching. Maybe in practical ways that, you know, how devotion times or whatever it looks like, the people you're ministering to. Maybe they've kind of drifted off the path and got an area, and then you have to slowly come along and say, how are you doing? How can I pray for you? How can I get you back where you need to be? A farmer protects. He's looking out for his farm, but as for us, we're looking out for other people that God puts in our dominion or on our farm. So he prepares, he plants, he's patient, he protects, and then finally, just the fifth thing is the best, really the best time is he provides. And so what would happen is when that time when the corn's ready or whatever, Emerson just did it about a month ago, he had like, I don't know how many sacks of corn that they brought out. He just bought a horse about 4 or 5 days ago to help carry those sacks, but he had a couple guys hired, and I didn't volunteer to carry corn. I wasn't up for it, I was busy. But when he brings it out, guess what? You get dukunu, you get all these corn, you know, for corn tortillas, and you share it with your family, you share with those that planted, you just share it. And then also you can benefit financially and to pick out the good ones and sell it to make some money for yourself. A farmer provides in different ways. Not only for them, you know, different, but how about in our spiritual way? How are you providing in the people that come in contact with your life? In what areas? How are you being wise with the time? And now I'm not talking financially. Spiritually. Prayers over people in your quiet time. And it could be also financially. It could be inviting them over for dinner. There's many different ways to provide as brothers and sisters as we minister to each other. So those are the five, you know, kind of things I wanted to share from my experience of, quote, a hardworking farmer, as you read there in the chapter. And I want to read the verse that says, 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 6 says, the hardworking farmer must be first to partake of the crops. And look what it says, verse 7, consider what I say, and may the Lord give you understanding in all things. Think seriously about the things that he shared, but as what I've shared here this morning. I know it's a lot, but I also wanted to give you a practical approach of what we deal with on a daily basis and how it all works together, but also having the right perspective and understanding. Because there, if you understand in Acts 1:8, you shall be my witnesses and you shall have power to what? Judea, Samaria, and the othermost parts of the world. There is a mandate to reach the world and make disciples. And notice it doesn't say make churches, it says make disciples. When disciples get together, guess what you call that? A church. Where the disciples are gathered, that's a church. And how do you make disciples? Spending time with them, building relationships, taking them to the Word, preparing, planting, being patient, protecting, and providing. And so that's kind of just what I wanted to share this morning with each one of you. I know it's a lot. I hope, you know, you can take something from it. I'm willing to answer any questions or concerns or something that did not make sense, or maybe you're interested in having an opportunity and taking a step of faith and getting an experience outside of the United States, which I encourage you to. There's plenty of opportunities. As leadership and as being an elder, you know, here it's about providing opportunities. You have opportunities for prayer. You have opportunities to grow on Wednesday nights. You have opportunities to go to Belize. That's all we can do. We can't force people. You can't force people. All you do is provide. People that are struggling and whatever, relationships or whatever, they're just broken. And you're here this morning, you're broken. All we can do is provide and offer prayer for you after the service. And then you, God, leave the choice up to you and how you take this information and to apply it practically into your life. And so I hope that you're encouraged this morning. I know it's not a typical sermon, but I just pray that you're encouraged. And as you think of a hardworking farmer, don't think of me. Think of a real farmer. When you think of a farm, don't think of Smiths. Think of all the people that are working to get it there. That's where it begins. Don't ever take it for granted. Let's pray. God.